You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
It's time for the VolQuest podcast, where we dissect the biggest news items of the week.
Hey, good Tuesday morning, everybody. Welcome to the VolQuest podcast. I am Eric Kane, alongside Brett Hubbs and Austin Price. A big thank you for joining us here today, and a big thanks to our friends Exterior Home Solution. As always, if you need roofing, siding, windows, or a garage, you can contact Exterior Home Solutions today. They've been local. They've been trusted since 1999. We trust them here at VolQuest.com, and you can too. Give them a call today at 865-524-5888, or visit them online at exteriorhomesolutions.com. We got a lot of stuff to get into here today on this week's edition of the VolQuest podcast, the latest in the transfer portal, both football, a little bit of basketball later on, some recruiting news, obviously a couple of guys who have jumped in the boat here in the last few days. Baseball, a really, really good weekend this past weekend over at number 3 Kentucky, and formerly number 3 Kentucky. And some new rule changes coming to college football. We'll touch base on that. But first, guys, at the time of this recording, one player has left Tennessee's program, has entered the transfer portal. That has been linebacker Elijah Herring. That's really been it so far. Not saying no one else will jump in, but to this point, Austin, it's just been a one-man show, and really there's not been any traction in terms of maybe bringing somebody in. We can talk about the running back position and all that, but bottom line, it's been kind of slow moving here.
Yeah, I mean, which goes back to the culture at Tennessee is really good, which goes back to the fact that Elijah Herring left because Elijah Herring just wants to start. He wants to play more than, you know, he may have played here. You don't know how much he would have played here because he didn't really give it a chance. He had never practiced with even the team under the William Inge linebacker era. But he, you know, I think wanted a clearer path to the field. Went from playing a lot of snaps a year ago because of injury. Did not want to go in reverse. And so that's why he visited Colorado this past weekend. May go see Penn State, Virginia Tech, a few others. Right now I think just having only one go into this point, it would shock me if there's not at least one more, and that's not saying some type of hint. I'm just saying kids are kids. I think it just speaks to kind of where this football team's at, where the culture's at, and, everything's rolling pretty well for Josh Heupel on the football side of things.
Yeah, and I think, too, we're always going to probably see the football spring portal window not be that big of big of a thing. Unless you've had, coaching changes at a bizarre time, unless something really weird has happened. I just don't think you're going to see a ton of that, because I think if you go in the portal now, you've got some limited opportunities, right? Tennessee's not alone in being the only school, being a school out there that doesn't have 12 needs in this portal window, right? I mean, would they take a guy if it's the right guy? Sure. Have they kicked the tires on what they want to do at running back? Sure they have, but it's not the same as the December window where everybody's got a need, right? And there's this feels a little bit like the supplemental draft in the NFL, yeah, right? As opposed to the draft. I know that's not a real fair comparison because guys are picking, but the pool's always going to be smaller, and you don't have to take someone now, which is why I don't think you're going to see just this mass amount of movement on any given year in the spring window time. I'm not saying you do away with the spring window, but I just don't think there's going to be a whole lot of activity, which is why it doesn't need to be any longer than 2 weeks.
Yeah, I mean, it kind of goes back to what we were talking about after the Orange and White game. I mean, this roster, sure, there's some areas where you can go out and improve it and get better, but you're not in survival mode anymore like you were the last couple of cycles. That's just not where you're at. You're not just going and taking a body to take a body because you have to. And so you can be really selective in terms of if you want to add anybody, do they fit culture-wise? Do they fit with what you want to do in that room and so on and so forth? You mentioned kicking the tires on the running back, Brent. Austin, has there been any movement in the last couple of days in terms of some names, evaluations, what Tennessee sees in potentially adding to that running back room, knowing, of course, you got Dylan Sampson, Cam Sutton's going to be out till sometime in September. And then behind that, a ton of unknowns and DeSean Bishop, Khalifa Keith, and Peyton Lewis, who didn't go through spring.
Yeah, Tennessee's looked at a number of guys' tape that have went into the portal. I don't think they're going to go on anybody, though. I think that they're going to kind of hold pat, hope that Cam Seldon heals up quicker and that Peyton Lewis is, ready to roll when he's ready to roll and can pick up things quick and DeSean Bishop can handle the load.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a situation. I used this example in Nashville radio the end of last week. If you're in the NFL, you would pick up a guy off the waiver wire and then you would cut him as soon as Lewis was ready and Cam Seldon was healthy. You would say, hey, thanks for the 3 weeks. Thanks for the cup of coffee.
Here's your money.
Here's a little bit of money for being here, and we're going to move on. I don't think you're going to take a guy just to take a guy, obviously. I don't think you really want to upset the apple cart. I mean, listen, Josh Heupel made a comment post-game or post-Orange and White game where he said something to the effect of this time of year, culture is really important. You don't want to bring in somebody right now that's going to throw your room on its head, if you will. And so I think they're going to be cautious with that. And then if you're not going to go get a quote RB1, right, which would upset Dylan Sampson in that room, then you got to look at, is the guy you're getting better than DeSean Bishop, right, AP? Isn't that kind of how you have to look at it? I mean,
yes.
Otherwise you're taking just a warm body. And I don't know that there's a whole lot of point in taking a warm body.
Well, not when you're under scholarship limitations. You know, if you were sitting at a full 85, sure. But when you're at 82 or 81, whatever they're going to be at this year, to try to get through this, the scholarship reductions, you're not taking a body to just take a body. And so I think they've weighed the pros, the cons. They looked at it from 400 different angles. And I think as we said here on, April 23rd, they're not going to take anybody. One in part because, they don't feel like that, they're going to just take, just a warm body. And two, because any of the higher end guys were going to cost more than I think Tennessee was willing to want to go down that road when you have a starting running back that they like in Dylan Sampson and two young guys, that are unknowns, but they really like them as well. And so, I think that's what this boils down to. They don't want to, as Hub said, mess with the mojo of the room. You don't want to stunt Cam Seldon's growth by bringing in someone who is comparable, but maybe not as good, but how does it affect the room?
And again, we didn't see a whole lot from the running back position in the orange and white game. But there are still,
you and I were blocking for him out there.
Yeah.
It's very thin.
And same could be said for scrimmages 1 and 2, but it did feel like, Brent, that, Josh Heupel was pleased with not only DeSean Bishop, but kind of where they were ending scrimmage number 2, thought that maybe it was the best that he's seen from them. And I feel like maybe that scrimmage and that week of work maybe gave him some confidence knowing, hey, maybe I don't have to go get a guy. So just because we didn't see it and it didn't look all great, there were still 2 other scrimmages and 14 other practices that the coaching staff was there to evaluate.
Well, and again, I mean, you had this debate on social media last week when somebody was just trying to do an evaluation on Jalen Wright. And they talked about how he wasn't challenged here. He ran against light boxes here. And basically he was talking about how hard it was to evaluate Jalen Wright moving to the NFL. I don't necessarily agree with what the point he was making, but I will take
from offense.
Yeah, I will take from this stance. Schematically, they do a lot of things in the run game, which help them be successful, creates light boxes. So, you can be successful in the run game where you don't necessarily have, the old Washington Redskins offensive line and you don't have, a Hall of Fame running back in the back end, back behind there. You can go be successful in that way. So, I think they feel like they're going to be okay. I mean, just the one concern is just the actual number of bodies. I mean, because, you're an ankle sprain away, you're a pulled hamstring away from putting yourself in a real, precarious spot. And that's the one, thing you're going to roll the dice on and go from there. Peyton Lewis is going to have to grow up in a hurry. Cam Seldon is going to have to grow up. I mean, they're banking a lot on 2 guys that haven't proven anything at this point, but they believe in those guys. And it feels like that's the direction they're going to go right now. as opposed to going out and trying to buy, you know, a top flight running back and cause somebody else in the running back room to leave or want to leave and all those types of things. So, again, we've talked about it for a couple of weeks here. This is a critical decision, and it's why Josh Heupel, you know, gets paid a lot of money to be trusted to make these decisions.
Yeah, or pay a lot for a mid-flight running back that, you know, you're overpaying for as well. And I just hope for Dylan Sampson's case the next couple of years, you know, those heavy boxes, they're running straight into him, you know, for his NFL draft progression. Because I'll tell you what, that makes a whole lot of sense from an X's and O's standpoint to run into a heavy box. Rodarius Jackson, one of two commits this past week for Tennessee football. In-state wide receiver, on three is very high on him, the 80th player in the country, ranked, you know, nationally. Four-star in-state wide receiver, the second wide receiver from the Memphis area in this class of 2025, joining Joe Kip Dotson. Rodarius Jackson, trending hard AP the last week or so for Tennessee.
Yeah, I mean, literally, like, felt like this one was, you know, it felt like Tennessee was in the lead, but it felt like, you know, he's not taking any visits. He'd only been to Ole Miss and Tennessee. He did go down to Alabama, but he hadn't really seen a whole lot of schools, and so it felt like this one was further away. But Rodarius wanted to go ahead and get this thing done. You know, a big get yesterday. You know, a quiet kid, reserved kid, but I mean, he's a monster on the field. And, you know, legit 6'2.5", long arms, big hands, a kid that goes up high points the football extremely well and is aggressive, you know, as a receiver. So a big get for Kelsey Pope, big get for Josh Heupel. And I can promise you, as much as, you know, they all love Caleb Cunningham and Jamie French and some of those guys, they viewed Rodarius Jackson in that same level as those highly ranked guys. And so, you know, the staff is extremely happy, as we said here on Tuesday, about getting Rodarius Jackson, not only period, but in the boat this early, specifically, Hubbard.
Yeah, and I think this is, again, a situation where I think Tennessee did an early eval on him. That they were not late to the party. Sometimes with an in-state player, that can cause you some issues. They were not late to the party here at all. His stock has only gone up with all the national guys. As Charles Power and those guys around the country have seen more and more tape of him, his stock has gone up. Tennessee's been high on Rodarius Jackson for a while now. And to be able to get that one done, I'm surprised it's done right now. Now, I didn't interview him when he was in Knoxville last time. I listened to it. I watched him and just kind of said, hey, and just passing by. I don't have the relationship with him that you have, AP. But I'm surprised that this one, I thought it would be done this summer, but I didn't think he would be done before the month of May got here. It's a credit to Tennessee and what they did with him over the course of the last month or so with him to make him such a priority, make him feel like such the priority. They did a great job with him on this last unofficial visit, obviously.
It's because they're treating him like the Frenches and the Cunninghams, right? I mean, they're making him feel like he is that five-star priority.
Well, right, AP? 100%. And the best thing going for him is he's Darnell Wright. And what I mean by that is he's not like most kids who are old. He's young. He doesn't turn 17 until August. So a year from now, He'll be in fall camp at Tennessee when he turns 18. Like, this kid's got, I mean, like, you start thinking about, like, the growth plates and all that stuff. Like he's got room to grow.
But physically, he's not done filling out. Maturing is your point. I mean, it's not necessarily about, okay, he's going to grow 5 more inches because his growth plates aren't closed and all that chatter. But from a physical maturity standpoint, there's a lot of room to grow physically from a strength standpoint because of where he's at age-wise. Yeah, much the same way it was with Darnell. Darnell was just a big body guy who was trying to play catch-up in his strength numbers, right? I mean, and obviously did and ended up being a top 10 pick and had a great career. But, I mean, I think that it just means the ceiling's higher when – you know that he's not the most mature. He's not completely matured out physically at this point.
That's right.
He won the Tennessee Titans Mr. Football Award this past year. 3A football here in the state of Tennessee, but 1,742 all-purpose yards, 27 total touchdowns, 7 interceptions on defense. Dude was getting it done for sure. So Rodarius Jackson, and real quick, AP, you've got Dotson, who reaffirmed, like, hey, he's Tennessee guy a couple weeks ago. You now have Jackson. We've mentioned the big wide receiver board. We've already thrown out some Cunninghams and some Frenches and some other names. Where does another in-state guy like Cam Sparks kind of at right now? I know that you've mentioned in the last couple weeks that, hey, he needs to stop fooling around a little bit if you want to get in the boat. Kind of where is he in with some other guys at the receiver position?
Well, he just took a visit this past weekend, and not to Tennessee. Listen, Cam's at his own pace. He's got to go at his own pace. And, if he ends up picking Tennessee, if they still have room, then, Tennessee would obviously, take Cam Sparks. But, at the same time, they're recruiting Derrick Meadows. They're recruiting, Caleb Cunningham, Jamie French, Travis Smith, Marcus Harris. You can go right down the line. Kelsey Pope has got a fairly wide-ranging board from, sea to shining sea, so to speak. And, if they beat Cam Sparks to the punch, then the spot may not be there. But, again, we'll see what kind of timeline Cam Sparks has, over the next month or so.
AP, is this three or four?
It's definitely three. I think it's four.
If it's the right one.
Yeah, because you got to remember, you're going to lose Brew. You're going to lose Dante Thornton. You're going to lose there's one more, I think. And then you're naturally going to lose somebody to the transfer portal, right? I mean, right now we sit here on April 23rd, nobody's leaving that room. And, I just wonder, even if they play a bigger rotation this fall, where are things with
all those guys
on the fringe? Play a little bit, but not play enough. I mean, how many of them are like Elijah Herring, where, I'm playing, but I'm not playing as much as I'd like, and I just want to go play somewhere.
All right, so let me ask you this, too, at the receiver position before we wrap that up. Where are they with the Blackshear kid from over in Savannah?
Yeah, I mean, that Tennessee-Georgia battle, in my opinion, you'd have to think Georgia's got a really good chance to pull in the kid from, Savannah. He likes Tennessee a lot, but, clearly, is not real close to committing based off of, his talk with Chad Simmons last week. So, that's another name, though, that, you have to think about when Tennessee's, working kids. And then I'll be interested to see kind of where Georgia goes with him, where they go with Travis Smith. Georgia's known as that tight end school. So, it works against them a little bit with receivers, because they run the football so much, and when they do throw it, they throw it to tight ends. But, I think they'll become a more flashy name for receivers over the next year or two.
All right, so nine commits for the class of 2025 now for Tennessee. Rodarius Jackson highlighted the start of the week here on a Monday afternoon by jumping in the boat. And late last week, Tennessee got a commit from a safety in Sidney Walton. AP, tell us a little bit about Sidney Walton and kind of where that defensive backfield is now with, I think that makes three in this class.
Yeah, and so he's a safety. Kid's originally from Detroit, plays down at Moody in Alabama, long kid. Tennessee, loved his tape. This is another eval kid that, they wanted to get in on. They were able to work him hard. He picks Tennessee over Ole Miss. And, again, I think a kid that's, physically got more room to grow, more room to fill out. But, there's certain things, that he has, you just can't teach. And so, rangy, and again, safety that Tim Banks liked a lot.
Yeah, I think the defensive back, and this has nothing to do with Sidney Walton, but I think that whole room is an interesting dynamic, AP, because we talk about the running back room, right? You talk about not upsetting the apple cart and not stunning the growth of a Cam Seldon, by bringing in a transfer guy. They brought a bunch of transfers in that defensive backfield, and where are they with the development of some of those young guys? I think that is an interesting balance that all rooms have, all position groups have, that you have to deal with, and I think that's a learning curve of the portal, right? Of like, okay, is the juice, to borrow your line, AP, is the juice worth the squeeze for 1 year of a guy versus playing a young guy who just needs to grow and learn and develop? And I think I think that's something that assistant coaches and coordinators are trying to constantly battling. Don't you? Or do you think that's, you know, off the reservation, so to speak, in terms of my thoughts?
No, I agree with you. I think it boils down to, you can't have it both ways. Like, you can't go take a bunch of high school kids, invest NIL deals in them, and then not play them. But at the same time, you're trying to do the best thing for the football team. So, like, when one of those things doesn't match up or mesh, like, you know, it makes things more interesting. So, I think you just have to decide what you want to do. Now, with this staff, linebackers, they played a big rotation. Defensive line, they played a big rotation. So you can go take kids out of the high school ranks because those kids are going to play fairly early. At DB, you just haven't played a big rotation. And when you played, you played a bunch of older guys. So, like, to me, it's easier to say, you know what, we're not going to take as many DBs in high school. We're going to take most of them out of the portal and go that route than other positions. Based off of how they play kids.
Yeah, Eric, I think it's hard. I mean, we talk in recruiting for years. I mean, the mantra in recruiting when I started covering recruiting was you always projected 2 years away. You're always projecting 2 years down the road. With the portal right now, that notion is not nearly as valuable. Yeah, it's 2 weeks you're trying to project, much less 2 years. I mean, it's a different adjustment that is out there right now. And I think there's a hard balance because you don't want to be John Gruden in a free agency team, right? With a bunch of older veterans and trying to piece one team together from 1 year to the next. You got to have some continuity in there, but how do you balance both? And I think that's an interesting deal. I think Tennessee's done a solid job of it to this point, but I think it's a constant battle.
Yeah, I think Tennessee's done a really good job with it if you look over the last couple of cycles. But, your foundation of your football roster, in my opinion, needs to be from your traditional high school recruiting from the prep level. Guys that you like, evaluate, spot, you know, commit, sign, put them in a strength and conditioning program, nutrition program, and all that. And sure, like, I mean, those guys could leave through the transfer portal if they're not playing immediately as a freshman. But I think that's where the foundation of your team needs to be. Now, you can go get some really, really great pillars from the transfer portal, a la Hendon Hooker. I know that was not even with the Heupel staff, but, you know, him and some other guys, and they could be really, really good for you. But there's got to be a balance there. But I think you always have to, you know, recruit. And it's almost like a year-to-year thing because you're going to have to re-recruit these guys back to your roster in those end-of-the-year meetings. And that's why I think the UTSA game and some of those other games this year were so critical to get Caleb Webb a touchdown early on. He ended up having to play a little bit because of some injuries and Chaz Nimrod, but to force-feed those guys in there. And then at linebacker, you didn't have a choice. They had to play. We always talk about it last year. They should have force-fed those defensive backs in there a little bit more, and I think they will this year because they're not going to have a choice. So it's an interesting balance. But to your point, I think Tennessee's done a really nice job the last couple of years.
Let's go back to the point a minute ago about receivers. Caleb Webb and Chaz Nimrod, they played a lot due to injury near the end of the year. If the reps and the snap count is low for them this year because the room is more full and more talented, where are they at the end of the 2024 season? That goes back to what I was talking about, just like, you know, the numbers on receivers. Because you just don't know. Some kids are willing to hang in there, battle work. Some kids are maybe, I played 15 snaps, but I want to play 40. I'm going somewhere else. And you can't hate them for that. I mean, they want to play.
Sure. And that's what happened with Elijah. I mean, Elijah's snaps went down as the season progressed because they were playing Jeremiah Thielander in the rotation because he had earned those opportunities. And now all of a sudden, instead of playing, you know, 60 snaps a game, you know, he was down to 40 snaps a game and that type of thing. So it's a very difficult challenge for college coaches to manage all of that at the end of the day. And I just think you have to understand as a college coach, I'm not keeping everybody. There's no way I can keep everybody happy. So I've got to play. I'm just going to play my best. You know, that gives me the best chance to win and go from there. I don't, you know, you're not keeping 14 DBs happy. It's just impossible, right? I mean, you know, you just have to learn that this is how it's going to be. And hey, some guys have to move on, and that's what happens.
A rule change, a couple rule changes coming to college football this upcoming season. How will that affect Tennessee and, of course, Tennessee baseball? A huge series win in the Commonwealth this past weekend. That's coming up next here on the VolQuest podcast. But first, let's get a word from our buddy Mark Packer on his mansion's roof, our friends over at Exterior Home Solutions.
Severe weather can strike at any time in East Tennessee, and Mother Nature can do severe damage to the first and most important line of defense that you and your family have against Mother Nature, and that is your roof. Whenever she strikes, make sure that you call the people that I call. Make sure you trust the people that I trust, and that's my friends at Exterior Home Solutions, because they're more than friends, they're truly family.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time, the Roast of Tom Brady, a Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for the Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
As always, thank you to our friends, local, trusted since 1999. That is Exterior Home Solutions. You can pick up the phone and get a free estimate today by calling 865-524-5888 or visiting them online at exteriorhomesolutions.com. We'll get into those new football rule changes, talk a little baseball here in a moment, but in the era of the transfer portal, it's still swirling, a little bit of crossover season in the portal right now. Tennessee basketball is trying to fill out its roster for next season, and still trying to figure out who makes sense and bringing in some guys on campus. Of course, one transfer portal commit already, and Darlington Stone Dubar. Who could be next, AP? I know there's been a couple of visitors, and there might be some more on the way this week for Rick Barnes and his staff.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see what happens with Igor Milicic, the young man from Charlotte who started his career at Virginia. You know, kind of a stretch four. Kid can shoot the three, shoots a little less than 40%. Had a good visit, but clearly wasn't, you know, clearly wasn't good enough to shut it down. And kind of we'll see where things go from here. But Tennessee still having active conversations with him. You know, how much is NIL involved? I don't know. But it's involved with a lot of these kids. So, you know, it'll be interesting to kind of just see how things transpire out. You know, and does Tennessee able to double back with the kid from Belmont, right? I mean, everybody's kind of, you know, said North Carolina's the team to beat. The kids from over in Charlotte. Yeah, Kate Tyson, the kids were originally from over in Charlotte. But, you know, I think North Carolina's feeling a little bit of heat there. They took their whole staff to go and see him over in Nashville. You know, they clearly feel like he's an important part of the puzzle for them next year. But the kid had a sneaky good time here, and I think meshed really well with what Tennessee does. But how much does the home state calling play into this?
Yeah, and I'm gonna tell you something. For all the talk that we say about the football portal being wild, it doesn't hold a candle to the basketball world. But because
it never has, even
yeah, that's exactly right. And that was my point. I mean, we should not be surprised that the basketball transfer portal world is as wild as it is, because the high school recruiting for years through the AAU stuff and everything else has been vastly different and much more complicated than football has ever been. I think the NIL factor in college basketball is crazy right now, because you're dealing with a smaller pool of guys, right? There's not nearly as many people on your roster. So now you got to worry about your locker room relationships, okay, and how you're going to handle all that financially. But you also know one guy can make a difference, right? See, Dalton Connect is the example for what that can be. So those guys think that in the portal think that their price should be even higher, because the impact they can make is higher than the impact that you make in the football world. And so, I mean, the basketball stuff is just, from an NIL standpoint, is really wild right now. And so we'll see. I mean, you know, you never know what's going to happen with any of it. I think for coaches, it's pretty maddening. It's pretty hard to figure out. You've also got the overlap. I mean, are you going to take a transfer from a guy who is also going to go through the draft process? They're in the portal, but they're going to go through the draft process. Right. Do you want to go that route with them? I mean, there's a lot of variables in the basketball world that's pretty wild. We'll see what happens with the forward from Ohio State, if he ends up visiting or not, who just went into the portal. We'll see if it doesn't feel like Tobe Awaka is going to come back, but we live in a world where you never know anything that's going to happen. It was pretty clear there was some frustration by Rick Barnes when he met the media last week. Just kind of, I mean, I know he said, hey, you know, the phone's ringing. We're having a lot of good conversations with everybody. But clearly they're having more conversations than they would probably like to have with people right now because they've got so many spots to fill. And you know, and then they didn't have anybody in this past weekend. So we'll see what that looks like.
Here's the deal on Tobe. Tobe, in my opinion, didn't want to leave. Wasn't planning on leaving. Then he found out Jonas was definitely staying. Decided to go. Then Jonas, you know, leaves the next day. But once he got in and the phone started ringing, everybody around him said, hey, you need at least, you know, even if you think you might go back to Tennessee, you need to take at least a couple of weeks, hear what everybody has to say, and kind of like, you know, not knee-jerk something just because Tobe is now because Jonas is now leaving. So I think that's part of this. Is like there's the people around him have said, hey, take a week or two and kind of look at everything. Right.
And so, because Tennessee has all these open slots, he can almost kind of afford to do that.
Correct. And so, like, I think that that's part of this. And so I think there's a method to why he's not just been like, oh, I'm back in.
Sure. Well, and listen, everybody likes to be courted, right? I mean, you know what I'm saying? I mean, everybody likes to have options and they like to be courted. So it's one thing to say, I don't really want to. But then, as you mentioned, when three or four schools want to have a Zoom conversation with you and they want to visit you and that type of thing, it changes the narrative. I don't know that Tobe's had a ton of conversations with Tennessee over the course of the last week, which is why I think you heard Rick Barnes say when he met with the media, hey, we're not waiting around on anybody. We've got to go, because I don't know that they feel like they've been kept kind of in the loop with where he is with things right now. Door's obviously not closed because of the number of spots that they have there. Tennessee's obviously not sitting back just waiting on him. So we'll see what happens with that. It's going to be a wild couple of weeks across the college basketball landscape because of everything that is potentially out there. And we'll see what that looks like for Rick Barnes and the staff as they put it together. I guess speaking of wild, Eric Kane, is that how you describe Lexington this weekend? I mean, you had the dugout chants, you had the wind blowing out, and you had a lot of runs scored, you had wild kind of pitching decisions in terms of kind of just who you're putting out there. And Sunday was strictly survival for Tennessee on a weekend where they matched the baseball really well and took two of three and could have very, very easily swept. They could have also lost the series on Sunday. So, it you know, the baseball gods play themselves out the way they play themselves out, obviously. Tennessee gets the series win. They jump up to 3 in the rankings. If I'm not mistaken, in the D1 rankings on Monday, was it not A&M is 1, Arkansas's 2, Tennessee's 3, Kentucky's 4?
Yeah.
Sounds like the SEC is a pretty good baseball conference.
Yeah,
not,
I mean,
not bad, right?
Yeah, no shocker there, right? It's been a pretty good conference for a long time, and this year's no different. From the checkerboard map behind the pitching mound where, you know, behind the rubber, you know, Tennessee does the same thing to the softball chants in the dugout all weekend long. I mean, it was quite the environment in Kentucky. But in serious note, real talk, I mean, the crowd was incredible. They set an attendance record Friday and Saturday, a weekend attendance record. It was a fun, awesome college baseball series. It was number 4 versus number 3 at the time, and Tennessee goes on the road and, as you mentioned, you know, could have lost the series on Sunday, could have easily won 3 games. They found ways. And Sunday is the perfect example of what college baseball is. You have, you know, you have two top 5 teams that you're just trying to slug it out in game 3 of a series, and you know, one wins 13-11. That is college baseball right there. Pitching is not a thing on Sundays a lot of the times, even with your better teams. and with some teams that, that can certainly hit it that you're going up against. So a really good weekend. I mean, Christian Moore is an alien right now. It's just incredible. And, you know, we were talking before we went on. I mean, he's six away from – he's five – yeah, six away right now from tying the single-season home run record, which on this pace he will definitely do.
We got 19.
Yeah, he's at 19 now, so he's five away.
Five away from tying.
Yeah, five away from tying the single season. I had it in my four takes. It's over there somewhere. But nonetheless, I mean, he's two ahead of Blake Burke right now in career home runs. He's hitting an incredible, like, nearly 400 in SEC play. He has 13 home runs in SEC play, which is just insane. So Christian Moore is doing what he's doing. Kavaris Hears got back in the swing of things, no pun intended, this weekend, which was great to see. Dylan Dreiling continues to do what he's doing. We could go on and on. I mean, the fact of the matter is you could have won on Friday. You let one slip away. Saturday, you came back and you did what you needed to do. Aaron Combs was great out of the bullpen. And then Sunday, you weren't ever going to go away. And you win that series. And this is obviously the best series win of the season so far for Tennessee.
Yeah, I mean, they just have so many different options. It's kind of crazy, you know, where they're at right now. And obviously, they've got great leadership from Christian Moore and from Blake Burke. I mean, to see, I guess it was Christian Moore, to see his reaction to Peebles after the sack fly.
And Kavaris Tears.
And the way that, you know, they kind of went after him to like, hey, we got to have you. Like, that's big time, you know, way to show up. I mean, we talk about culture. I think culture is the most overblown word in sports these days, right? I mean, it's culture and all this other stuff. There's a different deal with that baseball program. Because guys have paid their dues, right? I mean, you look at Blake Burke. Blake Burke wanted to play a whole lot more his first year at Tennessee. He was a DH, right? I mean, that's where he was. Christian Moore was a guy who had to mature along the way. He played some, but he had to mature. And now those two guys, and Tony talked about it after the series, it's about what they do in the locker room and what they do in the clubhouse for this baseball team and this program that they learn from the people in front of them. Right. I mean, and that's, I mean, we talk about it in basketball. You're looking forward in football. You're starting to see it emerge in football. That's what you want your program to be, is the standard never changes as it, you know, what's the same, tradition never graduate. The standard never graduates. Yeah. And that's, I think that's what you're seeing out of Tennessee baseball right now, which says a lot about what Tony Vitello and those guys have done in their tenure at Tennessee. It's pretty remarkable.
I think we had the question maybe on last week's Mailbag podcast about kind of how a locker room dynamic shifts from year to year. Is it the coach? Is it the players? And obviously, it's the players who make your team, who make your roster, and you watch from those ahead of you. You know, that first year with Simo and Burke, when they were kind of, you know, part-time players hitting in the lineup every now and again, they were watching Trey Lipscomb. They were watching Drew Gilbert. They were watching Jarrell Ortega. They were watching guys who just waited their time and worked and worked and worked and then went out there and performed. And they certainly went through their growing pains. I was thinking the other night, man, I mean, no disrespect to last year's team because it was a great team. They finished so strong. They had resiliency. And, of course, it went to Omaha. But you think about that infield last year. Blake Burke, excuse me, Blake Burke and Christian Moore, complete liabilities defensively on the right side of the infield last year.
Now they're the opposite, especially Burke.
Yeah, I mean – Yeah, Simo is not a liability. He's probably the weak link, but he's not a liability. And Burke is arguably your best defender on the team right now.
The play he made on the bunt was fantastic. And then there were two or three other times that, you know, they threw it in the dirt, man, and he backhanded that thing. You know.
Dude, he's got a couple of scoops, and he saves so many different errors. And that's the biggest compliment you can give to a first baseman is how many errors can you save your shortstop, your third baseman, and so on. And he's done a great job. But I mean, there were liabilities in the field at times last year, and they've improved so much. And all around, I mean, Burke is going up there and trying to hit a double every single time. And you're just seeing the confidence that's just oozing from him. So it's been fun to watch, man. They have they are great leaders because they've learned from those in front of them. They've got other guys like Charlie Taylor, Ethan Payne, who don't play a big role on the field that are just as vital in terms of that locker room cohesiveness. And you're right. I mean, it was great to see Simo and everybody go over there, but you know, when Peebles had that sack fly, Kavaris Tears sprinted to first base and gave him a hug. Because Cannon Peebles was arguably one of the bigger pickups out of the transfer portal. Right. He was their best guy this offseason. And it just hasn't worked for him this year. I mean, he's been benched. Cal Starks, your catcher. So seeing that type of celebration for him just goes to show you how much these guys love each other. And, of course, how great the locker room is, and you know, they're winning ball games too.
Yeah, it kind of helps when you win games. Now, you got to take care of business this week, right? You got a Missouri team that doesn't hit it. They don't hit it very well. You got to show up. I mean, you can't slip along the way here at any point in time when you look at what's ahead for this team. But I think you got to like the way Tennessee's playing baseball right now. The sweep over LSU, to come back and you grab, you know, two of three on the road at Kentucky. Then you get Missouri at home. You know, you like the way it's set up.
Before two big road games.
Yeah, I mean, I think the question, then you start to get into the month of May and you're starting to ask the A.J. Russell question a little bit more. Where is that? What's that going to look like? Because if Tennessee's going to make a postseason run, they're going to have to pitch it a little better than they did, unless the matchup fits them perfectly in regional play and they run into a couple teams that don't have enough arms either. So I think the Russell question becomes much more prevalent here in the next couple of weeks in terms of what he's at and where he's going with this thing. But this is a baseball team that's gotten better, Eric Kane. I think they're a better baseball team right now than they were 2 or 3 weeks ago, and I think that's a credit to this group and to this coaching staff.
Yeah, for sure. And I want to hit on a couple of things here. I know we got to go, but A.J. Russell, yeah, you know, May is when I would kind of target it, mid, you know, early to mid-May, and I'll continue to ask the question. He's been throwing a little bit here the last couple of weeks after being shut down for a little bit. But even when he comes back, it's not going to be, hey, I'm going to go get the ball on Friday and throw 110 pitches. He won't ever do that this year. They will say, okay, short stint guy, you can open, you can middle relief, you can close. We're going to use the September call-up how we see fit, but it's going to be in short stints whenever he comes back. The next 2 weekends, you better take care of business. I mean, I wrote my 3-2-1 yesterday that I never really wanted to, like, call a sweep, you know, in this league because they're so good. But Missouri's a bad baseball team. You're playing at home.
And they got you last year. You owe them one, right?
I mean, yeah, for sure. Yeah, you got swept on the road in Como in the snow last year. You owe them one. So take care of business at home. And this team ranks last in the conference in batting average. I mean, so on and so forth. I wrote it in 3-2-1. Just not a good team. Oh, but they swept Florida 2 weeks ago. Well, Florida is right above them in the standings, and that's weird to say. But the next weekend, you're on the road. I get it. Take care of business against the Gators. I mean, you got two bad baseball teams coming up. And nobody's truly bad in the SEC, but you're great, in my opinion. So take care of business. You need to take care of your games in front of you and start stacking up those W's before you get to Vanderbilt and, of course, on into postseason play. So really good weekend. Love how Tony was, you know, pulling different punches and not afraid to pinch hit guys. And, you know, Colby Backus was in the outfield there at the end of the game, which I thought was awesome. And, you know, pinch hit opportunities just shows you how deep this team is. But no doubt about it, biggest win of the series so far over number 4 Kentucky now. And Tennessee baseball is rolling. They've won 5 straight SEC series.
Yep, should be 6. Should win it. They choked that one to Alabama, I thought.
Yeah, should be 6, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you know, but again, I think they've all learned from those things. And that's what you're wanting to do is continue, because it's, you know, it's about the end of the year where you're at. They position themselves well for regional, potential super regional stuff, where they're at in the rankings. You just got to go finish it out and stay locked in the way they did. I thought they were ready to play from the moment they got off the bus Friday in Lexington, Kentucky, which I don't know that that was the case at Auburn earlier in the year, right, or at Alabama earlier in the year. They were ready to go from the jump in Lexington. I know they didn't get the Friday night game, but you know, they I thought they played well and loved the way that they handled themselves in an environment which was going to be raucous and, you know, as you mentioned earlier, have a super regional feel. So big weekend for them. We'll see what happens with Tennessee basketball in the transfer portal, right, Eric Kane? We'll see what happens with the Lady Vols. Austin Price continued to drop some Lady Vol nugget for you on the Generals quarters with the transfer world as Kim Cole is working there.
What can't this guy do?
I know.
Right?
We'll see. It looks quiet on the football transfer front, but every time you say that, something pops up. So we'll keep track of all that as well.
Yeah, the biggest thing I did this weekend was I set the record for most people to ever attend a game at Kentucky Proud Park. They all rolled in there to see Addison and Avery, and the girls did not disappoint.
And they heckled Eric Kane throughout the Saturday. So there you go.
I'll take it.
I will say this. My oldest, she leans out and she's like, because we'd had a little fun. Like, I was like, I had them do this video going up and people hadn't saw it and said, you know, Eric, you couldn't get the job done Friday night, so we're headed north, you know, put it on Twitter. So then she just does it on her own. She's a little more bold than Avery is, Addison. She just leans out. She's like, Eric Kane, that's how we do it. And like all the kids, or not all the kids, but all the fans right there, they thought that was the funniest. I thought that was,
she certainly takes after you, whereas Avery takes after your lovely wife. It was funny. It was a really, I bet you guys had a blast. I mean, again, that was a attendance record on Saturday.
No, I love that park. There's not a bad seat in there. Yeah. I mean, I will say this. One second, now when I'm right behind the dugout, first base, and one section over, they quit having seats, and they just bring in chairs. Like, that part of it's weird. But like, it's a fantastic park. And I will say this, for a park that is always known to be playing as a big park, some of those balls, man, I just thought they were routine pop-ups. They just kept going and going.
The wind this weekend carried like at least three out of that park.
Like the first one that Christian Moore hit on Saturday, I thought was just a routine fly out to right field. And they just kept going and going.
It's a good weekend.
Kentucky had a few of those on Sunday.
Yeah.
It's a lot bigger park now than it used to be. It used to be a little league park back in the day. I mean, it was a home. It was like church league softball out there. It felt
so. It was
like
Mickey Mouse, pretty Mickey Mouse operation over there.
Yeah, it was very small. Lots of home runs hit in that ballpark back in the day.
There were plenty of home runs this weekend.
There were. Wind aided, but yes, there were.
All right. Good stuff here on the VolQuest podcast. Thanks so much for joining us here. We'll be back on Thursday for the Mailbag podcast. We'll answer any of your questions about Tennessee football, transfer portal, basketball, baseball, recruiting, all that and more. It's coming up on Thursday on the VolQuest Mailbag podcast. Big thank you to our friends, Exterior Home Solutions, for making this coverage possible. Pick up the phone today for a free estimate by calling 865-524-5888 or visiting them online at exteriorhomesolutions.com. For Austin Price, Brent Hubbs, I am Eric Kane. Appreciate you guys, as always, here for joining us on the VolQuest podcast.
You've been listening to the VolQuest podcast every week here on VolQuest.